Hey guys, and welcome to the very first Tobacco Business Sales podcast. I think we will be doing 8 in all, and today's episode is actually about introducing ourselves individually and a bit about Tobacco Business Sales. So Damien, do you want to lead the way and tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure.
How you got into this?
Thank you, Sam. Damien Fahey. I've been with Tobacco for 19 years now and doing what we do in Christchurch. How did I get into this? There's lots of background there, but essentially my background is I've got a Bachelor of Commerce, I've been involved in manufacturing, I've been involved in import and distribution, I've been involved in some of the major brands that come into New Zealand and selling to big box retail, and I've sold to small box retail as well. And then I've been involved in an IT business, and following that, tobacco kind of rolled along as an opportunity. And I guess with my background, my interest in business, it was an ideal opportunity to say, you know what, this kind of intrigues me. Let's find out a bit more about what a business broking is about. And really, the last 9 years, 19 years have been a blast. Had a few weird challenges through the GFC, but they're all good learnings. And what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So, and we've been very strong in the last few years. It's been a lot of fun. So that's really a bit about me.
And yeah, I've been doing this for eight years. So I'm an accountant, I guess by trade, worked in banking pre to that. And then in about 2017, I jumped ship from the exciting world of accounting to selling businesses. So I'm still a chartered accountant, still got that ticket. And now very recently, I have my real estate agent's license, so which is the top one. So hopefully no more study for me, because it's been a long road and I'm getting a bit old and a bit slow. So it's nice to actually not have to focus on any studies for a while and focus on the business. And Damien, do you want to tell us a bit about the history of tobacco? You've got 10 years on me. So and maybe a bit about the GFC and the challenges and how we've sort of gain strength from there.
Absolutely. Well, it's quite a nice segue into why does Sam need a real estate license to sell a business? Because he's a chartered accountant. He's very professional. He's
most of the time
got all the skills. Business sales and business brokering is actually governed by real estate law. So if we any business broker who practices has to have a real estate license. I have my salesperson's license. Sam's now got his salesperson's license, his branch managership, and also his full agent's license. So that's why we have to do it, because the legislation says we do. Tobacco itself has been going, well, gosh, Jim Tobacco started selling businesses in Tauranga back in the mid-1990s up in Mount Maunganui. Long story short, by the mid-2000s, we had 5 branches around the country. We still have 5 branches around the country. So we are nationwide, but each of our branches is owner-operated. So Sam and I own the Tobacco Christchurch branch, which basically looks after the entire South Island. But every year to 18 months, we catch up with the guys up north. The nice thing about being part of a larger, let's call us a cooperative, it sounds quite big and fancy, it's not really, but we all share IT infrastructure, we share databases, we network, we talk to each other and have access to each other's appraisals and our sales that we have done in the past. So if we've got something gnarly that crops up here in the South Island, we can say, hey, well, we haven't actually sold a business that makes widgets before. We put out a note to the rest of the team, and at least a couple of people will put their hands up and say, yeah, we had something similar. This is how we handled it. We've got one just at the moment where one of our North Island guys has said, hey, I've got a business and they've got one client. How would I handle that? And interestingly enough, Sam and I have both had businesses that we have sold with that sort of background. So there's just different ways that you approach those sorts of sales. So being part of a bigger tobacco group or a wider tobacco group is really, really handy, just in terms of that, I guess, 20 plus years of intrinsic knowledge, the database, the market data that we have access to, and the fact that there's another 10 or 12 people out there like us who've gone through the ringer for that time period and whose brains we can pick when we need to.
And what I like about tobacco, and I guess the reason I joined tobacco many years ago, is that we are boutique, but we are solely business brokers. We don't sell land and buildings, or very rarely. We sell going concern businesses, and that's it. We're not part of a large real estate group. We are very specific about what we do and about what we don't do, which is a big part of our role also, isn't it? We probably, you know, maybe turn away half of businesses that we meet purely because it doesn't fit under our umbrella of what we sell, or if we don't think it's saleable. We're very upfront and honest. But yeah, we know, I guess we stick to our knitting. We know what we do and we know what we don't do, which I think is fantastic.
And the major, I guess, the major downside of having, I guess, being governed by real estate law is the way we get paid. We don't get paid like an accountant or your lawyer. You know, there's no hourly rate. If you succeed and you sell the business, then we take a commission. That's effectively how we get paid. So when we take a business on, we have to have a level of confidence that we can work with this owner, that we collectively agree where the value is likely to sit, and that we can get it sold, that we can find a buyer. That's not to say we just take the easy stuff. We don't. I don't think any business sale is easy, frankly.
Still looking, still
yeah,
looking.
Yeah, but we take pretty much anything that we feel we have a buyer audience that we can tap into, that we can succeed with. And that's really the key. And that helps us get our 8 out of 10 success rate, because that's one of the, I guess, one of the parameters that a lot of other brokerages might not perhaps be able to quite lay claim to. We get 80% of what we take to market over the line.
Because we have heard some agencies are 30%, 40% because they just want to secure listings, and they charge some upfront fees around marketing, etc. Whereas if we don't think we can sell a business, we'll be completely honest with that vendor. And look, predominantly the majority of our listings, they are referrals, and they're from professionals like accountants and lawyers. So we always want to do the right thing by them as well. So these videos, who are we trying to appeal to? My thoughts are, yes, business owners, simple. If you're looking at selling your business and you're sort of jumping online, you're scrolling through LinkedIn, this can be very helpful for you. But at the same time, it's to those referrers, to your accountants, to your lawyers. The more knowledge that you know about the sales cycle, about how to get your clients' businesses ready for sale, that's only going to help you advise your clients. A lot of accountants now are doing a lot of advisory. You're not just setting a set of annual accounts and doing a tax return. You're actually guiding your clients, whether that be what's my 5-year exit strategy. So hopefully you'll take a few things from these videos that can be passed on to your clients.
And the other direct, I guess, appeal is to both people that are looking to think or thinking about selling, but also people that are thinking about buying, because a lot of people sometimes they often don't know what they want. They do know what they don't want, and that's great, because some of what they don't want we probably don't handle anyway. But a business purchase is still quite an emotional thing, and I know that sounds a little bit odd. You'd think, hey, if the business is profitable and it makes money, why wouldn't anyone want to buy it? Well, actually, you've still got to feel good about what you do in the morning when you jump out of bed. And I've had so many people say to me over the years, hey, look, great business, but mate, it just doesn't spin the wheels. That's fine. We totally get that. So we would say any business owner that wants to learn about what the process is involved in terms of selling their business, have a look at this, tune in, have a listen. A buyer who's thinking of buying, absolutely, this will be useful. And also buyers need to speak to us, because the more we know about them and their likes, their dislikes, the better it can be. And as Sam said, we love accountants. We certainly would never try and steal their lunch. We know accountants will at times get involved in the business sale process, and that's fine. That's entirely up to them. But most accountants will acknowledge that actually they don't necessarily want to get involved in the transaction. They can assist their clients to the point where we can take over that process and find the right buyer, negotiate a fair price, and move through the due diligence program in a way that's fair and reasonable, and basically get a result at the end of the day. So the buyer's happy, they've got a new toy that they can play with and they're very excited about, and the vendor moves on and does what they want to do.
So Damien, what a lot of people, and I had just came from a meeting with two gentlemen who are looking at retirement, and they were completely new to this. They've run the business for 20 years. It's an absolute cracking business, and they don't know what they don't know. So they don't know the process, like what is it that I do? What do they need from me? At what point do they need to pay me money? So I sort of went through the whole process with them, but you just want to explain, you know, from the initial meeting, what is actually our process and what is it that we need from the business owner?
I would love to explain that because I even made some notes on that just before. Look, at the end of the day, there's probably 5 or 6 or 7 key steps. And within each of those steps, there's a whole bunch of, I guess, additional stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But essentially, from your introductory meeting this morning, assuming that they still like you after that meeting, they'll provide us with some numbers and we'll do an analysis, or you'll do an analysis of the business. Ultimately, value is mostly predicated by profit. How profitable is the business? To put a value around that, you then say, well, what's the appropriate multiple, A, for this business, taking into account a whole bunch of parameters, and B, for this industry. Some industries attract higher multiples than other. That's just the way it is. And that's defined by the market data that we have. So without getting into too much detail within this overview descriptor, we come back to them with a value. It might be a value range. And if they're comfortable with that, and to be fair, most of our vendors are, sometimes they would like a bit more. Sometimes they're pleasantly surprised. But if they're happy, they come on board as a listing. We write up an information memorandum. We commonly refer to those as an IM. And what is an IM? Well, basically, it's a company profile. It says, hey, this is where the business has come from. Here's where it is now. Here's everything that happens within the business, by and large. Here's how they make their money. Here's the financials. Here's some opportunity that the outgoing owners believe still is an opportunity, but they've chosen not to undertake for whatever reason it might be. It might be they just didn't want to put more capital in. It might be that it's digital related, and as boomers, we boomers are not necessarily the most digitally versatile. They might just say, hey, we'll leave that to the new person, and well and good. So we write up this IM. They approve it. Nothing happens, nothing goes to our audience of buyers without our vendors having a look and saying, yes, you've captured the essence of what I've got here, because that's really critical, eh? So we go to market, and there's a bunch of different ways we do that. Our database is a massive part of our success, and that's got 6,000 buyers on it, and 80% of what we actually sell, as you know, is sold through the database. But we can go wider. We can go to websites. We go to occasionally into printed media if it's a specialist or a niche area. So we engage in marketing. We get some inquiry. Every person that inquires must sign a non-disclosure agreement or a confidentiality agreement. Once they've signed that, some vendors then want to still have a say as to whether they approve that person to get the info, because up until now that buyer doesn't know the identity of this business for the most part.
Yeah.
Occasionally a business will be openly advertised, but for the most part they're not.
Yeah.
So assuming a buyer gets approved, they get the IM. For those who are interested, and we're probably only talking 5 to 10% of the inquirers, because most people don't know a lot about the business. We've put out a generic flyer. But for those who are interested, there's then a Q&A dialogue with the broker. At that stage, we would know quite a lot about the business. We don't want to disturb the vendor with every new question that comes in. If something pops up that we do need the answers to, then we'll reach out to the vendor and find the answers. Long story short, the buyer's happy. They say, look, I'm really interested. I want to meet the business owner. That meeting normally would happen after hours or in a weekend at the business site if it's working from premises. And they get shown through and they get a better feel for the business and what it's about. At that point, they then say, you know what? Yep, I'm happy to go to put an offer in. We negotiate and we liaise with the purchaser as to what an acceptable offer is. not only value, but also conditions and vendor warranties. We love lawyers, but they love vendor warranties, and that can be challenging. So we'll get into that a bit later. But long story short, we present our vendor with an offer. They will either say, you know what, I'm happy with this, I'll countersign it, or they'll run it by their lawyer. There might be the odd clause change or word change, or there may be one or two iterations around value. And at that stage, we then get a confirmed or an executed sale and purchase agreement. Then due diligence starts. Now, that's just a fancy two words for, hey, the buyer says to us, is everything you've actually shown me and told me about this business, is it accurate? We believe it is. Mm-hmm. We're not in the habit of telling porkies. So we assist through the due diligence process, but primarily that buyer is liaising with their accountant, with their lawyer, with their professional advisors. At the end of that, they then confirm their purchase or not. We might lose 1 in 10 that goes on paper, but mostly they would confirm their purchase. And that's by way of lawyer to lawyer, pay the deposit, and then in a month or 2 months or 6 weeks or however long it mm-hmm. might be, they settle the purchase. And just like a house, there's a settlement statement and there's mm-hmm. An apportionment
hand over
of
the keys.
Hand over the keys. Yeah, well, there's an apportionment of expenses, yep, you know. That's the process in a nutshell. Mm. But there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens.
And that's what I spoke to these gentlemen today, and they've got an import business. And they have some competitors, and they also have some customers that they think could be interested in purchasing. And so they wanted to know, how would we work around that? And I said, look, they are fantastic potential buyers, but if you were just to go to one of them and say, hey, do you want to buy my business? They're going to take their sweet time, and they're probably going to come back with a really low ball offer. So where we come to play is, yes, we want to go to market, but going to market doesn't mean naming the business and plastering it over social media. It means we're going out to our database with a discreet generic flyer to say, this is an import distribution business that services the X industry. So we're not naming the business, but what we're doing is we're then getting a flood of demand from our buyer's database at the same time that these potential businesses that want to acquire this business are looking. And it sort of gets them knowing that the business is to market. So A, they're going to have to move quickly. B, they're going to have to offer what the market value is. And whether it sells to those people, whether it sells to someone in our buyer's database, it's actually a win-win for the vendor because they're getting the best price and the best buyer as well. And what we often say is that the best businesses sell without anybody knowing that they've sold. And by saying that, it means we don't want, if the staff don't know and they're quite key, we don't want to upset them. We don't name the business. It's all very generic. We're very careful about who actually looks at the business information and signs that NDA. And then once it goes forward, they know once it's unconditional, we then actually introduce the new owners to the staff. So we try and keep everything in confidence. We're not fans of naming the business unless there's actually a need to, or we think it's going to be more beneficial in drumming up interest.
Fantastic. So Sam, we've talked through ourselves. We've talked about who should be listening to this podcast. We've discussed the process of sale. Have you got any wins that you might like to share over the last year or two? Clearly, without going into too much detail to identify the business, but sales where, and I can think of one, you'd broken your leg badly. You were cast in your lazy boy chair with your foot out in front of you.
Lazy boy.
And you've spent probably 2 months worth of phone calls and what have you on this particular sale. And it was a really good business, and it was starting to become even better. But it was just time for the owners to lessen their workload due to family commitments and whatever. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do. It was in an industry that fell off the cliff during COVID, and it had just started 2 years prior. So it was sort of went like that and then dropped, and then all of a sudden it was going like that. But the owners were younger than I, young kids. They needed out. And we found a buyer. It was private equity, which was fantastic, but it ended up being quite complicated because it had to be a share purchase. And that was all very last minute. And we had the vendors were at that time were on a cruise ship in Italy, I think. And my buyers were in Auckland, and I was stuck at home, couldn't leave the house with a busted leg. But it actually worked out quite well. We were having WhatsApp calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we're doing this and that. And we got it done. And look, it's been over a year now, and I'm actually still in contact with both parties, and they're all very happy. The vendors are actually still involved with the wee stake, and the business is actually continuing to go absolutely gangbusters. So there was a real success story where the vendors, yes, they relinquished some capital, and they got paid a bunch of money, but most important for them, they weren't retiring, it's just they freed up their time so they could do the school run and hang out with their children as they're in that special age, which I'm well aware of because I'm fortunate enough to have that flexibility in my role. Yet they're still involved in the business, more on a part-time basis, and at the same time, they're still receiving dividends, and they also can exit at any time and receive a very good return also. So yeah, that was a real win. It took a lot of time, but it kept me occupied while I was immobile.
It certainly did. Mm. Casting my mind back, I've got a couple actually. One, I've got a slightly larger one and a slightly smaller one, but they're both very, very different. The larger business had, it's niche retail actually. It had three quite large sites, and the buyer came to us. He had just been unsuccessful on another purchase, and he was, yeah, you could say he was perhaps a little bit miffed. He didn't quite fully understand why it had gone off the rails. But anyway, he looked at this opportunity and he said, you know what, this business is all about numbers, and I'm all about numbers. I get it. I really do get it. It was big box retail. And long story short, again, it took quite a few meetings and it took a bit of negotiation and dialogue, but the business sold. The new owner's been in for over a year now, and they've already looked to expand their footprint outside of Canterbury, up to the top of the south, which is quite exciting for them. And yeah, it's another example of where the owner has grabbed the bull by the horns, the new owner, and they're saying, you know what, this is fantastic. I'm just going to build it and grow it. And even though retail has been a little bit smashed in the last 12 months, They are muddling along pretty well, and clearly he has a lot of confidence in the industry to go into that growth process. The other wee one, which I will mention, was a couple of years ago now, and this isn't the best example because we would say to vendors, please act before this happens. The vendor was an estate. The actual owner of the business had passed away. The business had kind of declined to a level where it was functioning, but it was not functioning all that well. And the estate, or the trust associated with the estate of this gentleman, got a hold of me and said, look, have we got anything to sell here? Or do we just close the doors? And we actually looked at it and we said, you know what? Yeah, there is something to sell. And so what they decided to do was they put in a temporary manager, basically a GM for 6 months. This gentleman came down from Auckland every fortnight for a couple of weeks and did a smashing job, actually. And he held the thing together, started to really build it back up, and got the business rebranded and got some systems in place. The bottom line started to improve. The clients were happy. And there were several contracted clients for this particular business type. And we then went to market, and we actually had virtually a multi-office scenario. I had been working with the GM for probably 3 or 4 months before we went to market. That was all part of the deal. And the trust were absolutely delighted. We found a buyer. We chose an offer out of the several that were on the table. Due diligence progressed largely without too many issues. And the sale got completed. And that was very satisfying, because that was a business that could have just, the doors could have closed. Mm-hmm. And as I say, we would encourage vendors, if health is going to become an issue for you, sometimes we don't get a warning, but if you do, that's probably one of the, I guess, markers of, hey, maybe I do need to look at selling or at least replacing myself within the business.
Fantastic.
Okay.
And I think that actually wraps us up for the first episode, doesn't it?
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening if you made it this far, and we'll see you next time.